course, she was well connected. Æthelflæd was the daughter of Alfred the Great and his wife Elswith, who held court in Winchester in the heartland of their territory of Wessex, roughly what the English of today call the Home Counties. 11 centuries ago, England was halfway to becoming Danish, but this small group had another vision for the future, a Saxon but a Christian land. In the face of Alfred's legacy, it's as well to remember that during all Æthelflæd's childhood and all her maturity, the English were fighting the Danes on English soil. From 865, when the Danish Grand Army of Occupation arrived, to 919, when Alfred's son Edward took the submission of the Danes, as well as those of the neighbouring nations that had jumped on the bandwagon, that makes 54 years of war. Æthelflæd had two sisters and two brothers, and her mother Elswith, described as a distinguished matron, ran a tight nursery for her five children. They were not allowed to live lazily or heedlessly, we're told. That's to say, no hunting, gambling, or partying. Rather, they must learn the Psalms and Christian scripture. But not just that. They must learn Latin and history and apply themselves to Saxon books and especially Saxon poems. In between battles, their father Alfred was translating Latin books into Anglo-Saxon. This was a cultured household. Æthelflæd married Æthelred of Mercia, a native of Gloucester. This was an excellent match, and he was an excellent man, a close ally of Alfred, battle-hardened from recapturing the Severn Valley. By 888, married, and perhaps then aged about 18, Æthelflæd found herself standing beside her husband in charge of all Mercia. Together they founded the Church of St. Peter in his home city of Gloucester. Together they granted land to their friend, Wearfrith, Bishop of Worcester. According to this deal, the bishop was to have property in Oxfordshire and London and get the proceeds from lawsuits and trade in Worcester, including fines for fighting in the streets and cheating in the marketplace. Moreover, the Roman walls were to be repaired for the protection of all the people. But alas, there was to be no peace. In 892, a Danish army back from France sailed up the Thames, and the next year, Alfred and Æthelred were in action, from Essex to Exeter. A few years later, Æthelflæd took the first step in her military career. There was a planning meeting in London, at that time considered part of Mercia. London was in two parts, side by side, the old Roman town with its fort around the Barbican, and the market on the beach, or, as it was then called, the Strand, where boats floated up and beached with the tide. With Vikings coming in at all hours and helping themselves, bridge, waterfront and defences all needed upgrading. Present at the London meeting were Æthelflæd, her father, Alfred, her brother Edward, husband Æthelred, their close friend, Wearfrith of Worcester, and Plegmund, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Each of the clerics was given property at Queenhithe on the Thames, then called Æthelred's Dock, where the Millennium Bridge today makes its landfall in the City of London. This was a good sign that they expected to make money from customs. These were tremendous days. Alfred had fought for 20 years to make a safe space for the English in Wessex. He had built a chain of forts through his territory using old Roman forts, or where there weren't any, building square enclosures of earth banks and ditches, like Wallingford and Cricklade. Suddenly, the south looked secure, and it was time to clear the Danes from the rest of the island. But then he died. The two men left with England on their hands were Alfred's son Edward, now king, and his son-in-law, Æthelred of Mercia, the most experienced warrior. The Danes were by no means a spent force, and besides, with a succession there was a new danger, betrayal. Æthelwold, Alfred's nephew, took off to Wimborne with a nun, who had to be rescued by the army, but not before Æthelwold had escaped by night and made his way to Northumbria. There he reported to the Danes, announcing that he was King of England, which they accepted, no doubt with glee. Then, with the aid of the traitor, deprived of his nun now, and with a massive chip on the shoulder, the Danes harried Mercia and invaded Wessex, arriving at the fort of Cricklade and carried off everything they could. Edward reacted vigorously, charging into East Anglia. He urged the men of Kent to join him and sent them repeated messages, but they stayed put and were eventually overwhelmed by the Danish army with the loss of many senior Saxon and Danish nobles. But at least the dead included the errant Æthelwold, leaving Edward a freer hand to stabilise all eastern England with diplomacy. Meanwhile, Æthelred and Æthelflæd was shoring up the western flank. There were Danes to clear from the marches. Some had holed up in the old Roman fortress at Chester. And Æthelflæd and Æthelred winkled them out and refortified the city as a Mercian stronghold. This energetic couple were well on the way to reclaiming central England for the Wessex-Mercia coalition when the worst happened. The cork popped out of the Northumbrian bottle. The Danish army broke every agreement made with Edward and surged south into Mercia. Edward and his brother-in-law joined forces and met them at Wednesfield near Tattenhall on the 5th of August 910. It was carnage. A dozen great Danish warriors were killed, but Æthelred, Lord of Mercia, fell too, badly wounded. Many were the wounds sustained in Anglo-Saxon battles, and warriors could survive the day, but not necessarily heal. Slow death came later, after days, weeks or months of agony, unrelieved by painkillers or antibiotics. The doomed body kept alive by willpower and rage. After Tattenhall, Æthelred, great warrior, champion of Mercia, took almost a year to die. Æthelflæd would surely have nursed him when she could, but there was more pressing business on hand, and her enemies were multiplying. Not only the Danes and the Norse, but the Welsh smelt blood. But they hadn't reckoned with this lady. She sent an army into Wales, attacking and smashing up the fort at Brecknamere. In a smart move, she seized the wife of the Welsh king and 33 other high-ranking Welsh, holding them hostage. At this point, we can leave our parchments and books for a few moments and take the arm of archaeology, stepping down to join Æthelflæd on the 10th century earth of the Midlands. The places she fortified were referred to as burhs, the root of the modern word burgh. Burhs or burghs seem to have generally started as forts and evolved over the 10th and 11th centuries into local centres of administration and then of national and finally international trade. During a gap in the 1970s boom, I came to excavate the Burgh of Stafford with a team of students from the University of Birmingham. It was a major undertaking, four large areas and 30 trenches. These investigations showed that Æthelflæd had laid out a fort on the Stafford Peninsula alongside a Roman road where it crossed the river. There wasn't a Roman fort there, but the fort she built, it's argued, looked like a Roman fort, small and rectangular. Inside it was a church, an area of stabling and a big bakery. Four figure-of-eight-shaped ovens baking oat bannocks and wheat loaves. There was a hard standing where the grain could be brought in and a hut to store it. This was baking on an industrial scale. Experiments we did suggested a production rate in excess of 200 bannocks a day, enough to feed an army. Outside the fort on the east side, cattle were slaughtered and huge piles of bones dumped in the marshy ground beside the river. And pottery was made there, tons of it. And here was a strange thing. It looked like Roman pottery, so much so that the first archaeologists to find it reported it as such. It resembled the Roman pottery used in the Severn Valley almost 1,000 years earlier. Wheel thrown and a deliberate orange colour. Most of the pots came in the shape of jars of more or less the same size, and outside Stafford they are found only in other burhs, Shrewsbury, Bridgnorth, Chester, where they presumably served to deliver standard rations, honey, butter, lard. This was a command economy in which potters made what they were told to. The debris from the failed firings was dumped in the marsh or in pits beside the kilns, and in amongst the broken sherds were three human skulls, those that messed up, it seems. had lost their heads. This was a fierce military regime, supplying meat and bread to an army camp, and it was a camp made in the image of Rome. In those far-off mid-war years in Wessex, Æthelflæd's family had read their books and dreamt of a new province of Britain, ruled by Saxons under the civilising spiritual canopy of Christian Rome. Now they would bring it to pass. Roman pottery, Roman coinage, Roman camps, yes, even a Roman-style advance up the island. This was a dynasty that saw its future in a federal Europe. For General Æthelflæd, the end came fast. In 917, while Edward won peace for East Anglia, she gained control of Derby and Leicester, former Danish camps. In the following year, she arrived at the gates of York, in the Danish heartland. York's citizens promised, some by oaths and some by pledges, to act under her direction. She died, exhausted, at Tamworth on the 12th of June, 918. She had subdued the Danes, the Norse, the Welsh, the Britons of Strathclyde and the Scots. This was no minor contribution to the making of England. Brother Edward made his way rapidly to Tamworth and occupied it, losing no time in taking over her dominions and refashioning her reputation. The Mercian version of the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle says, with lawful authority, she held dominion over the Mercians. The Wessex version says she held it on behalf of Edward the King. And all the Mercians who had been subject to Æthelflæd submitted to him, and all the race of the Welsh sought to have him as their lord. Nice work, Edward. But maybe the victorious general deserved a bit more of a mention. A major figure at her father's court, a wise counsellor in political circles, a crafty manager of church affairs, a brilliant tactician, a robust disciplinarian, a builder of fortresses, afraid of nothing and nobody, possessed of the wisdom needed for war and peace. A great lady, a great general. As excavator of Stafford, I'm one of the scholars who has fallen under her spell, and I can persuade myself that in Stafford's rubbish pits and bread ovens, pebble surfaces and headless potters, I've met her at first hand. If she has been neglected by history, it's a great loss. It's her bravery and her own cleverness that lies beneath the foundations of the chief boroughs of the English West Midlands.
Martin Carver on Æthelflæd, and this week's essays, Anglo-Saxon Portraits, were produced by Sarah Taylor. Next week in the essay, Richard Mabey tells the story of a lifetime of weather, changing climates, every night, Monday to Friday next week at 10:45. And that's here on BBC Radio 3, where it's now 12 minutes past 11. Many apologies for the late running of our programmes this evening because of our earlier live concert from Manchester. Now, without any more ado, let's head north of the border to the last of our three live visits to one of the world's biggest winter festivals, Celtic Connections in Glasgow. So let's go over to the green room of the Royal Concert Hall there to join Mary-Anne Kennedy.
Well, we've reached the final Friday, opening curtain to the final weekend of Celtic Connections 2013. Once again, I can hardly believe that we've made it through in one piece. So many musicians, so many gigs, so many sellouts, so many late nights at the infamous Festival Club. Not me, you understand. And here we are, all in the green room, and we're still standing! Ah, they're well practised. You're listening to World on Three with me, Mary-Anne Kennedy, and with this final Bean Feast well underway, we have a suitably mighty lineup joining us here on stage at the Green Room Restaurant of the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall. Later on, we'll be hearing from one of the greats of American traditional music, the Old Crow Medicine Show. From the Highlands of Scotland, we'll have the sparkling sounds of Rachel Hare and her trio, and we'll also have the full force of Breton Pipe Band, Bagad Sonorian Anorion, and as many of them at least as we can get on stage. But we're going to start out in Scotland. Well, actually, no, not really. Another country entirely, as far as they're concerned. From Orkney, please welcome the great Party On Festival Band that is The Chair. Yeah. What a fantastic start to World on Three tonight. The chair from Orkney, and I'm joined by their box player. Now, first of all, tell me about the album name and where that comes from.
The album name is the name of the album is The Road to Hammer Junkie. And now, The Road to Hammer Junkie is a place in Rousey, which is one of the small isles in Orkney. And it's an old tune that we've rejuvenated a little bit, and we've tried to kind of jazz up a little bit as best as we can. And it's a good tune. We like it quite a lot.
So, Bob Gibbon, box player, tell us about the Chair Band.
Well, the Chair started off a good few years ago just as a session band. I suppose there was a good few of us that liked playing tunes in the pub, and we got together and we had a few tunes and we had a few more tunes and a few drinks here and there. And we started off being called a band called Lazy Boy Chair back in the early days. Nobody knows why we became called Lazy Boy Chair, but we soon found out it was a rubbish name for a band. We shortened it to The Chair shortly after, and...
I think there was a small matter of solicitor's letters as well, was there?
Yeah. we inquired about it, and we found out that they weren't too happy about it. You know,
they weren't traditional music fans.
No. they were into furniture. that was their bag, really. They liked furniture. We liked music. You know, it was never going to work.
So what is it? Lots of folk will be familiar with that other bunch of folks a wee bit north of you, Shetland, and their music. What is it that makes Orkney's music special?
Well, I mean, Shetland's good, but it's just... Orkney just has that something extra, and no one can really quite put their finger on it, but it's got a wee bit of extra swing to it, I always like to think.
As does the language. Thanks very much, Bob Gibbon, but just before we let you carry on, there's music to everything. I have to get a wee word with our percussionist, Robbie Thompson, here. Tell us how the gig was this evening, Robbie.
Oh, it was grand. It was good, yeah. Really enjoyed it. I don't know if anybody else did.
How does it compare to playing in Orkney?
Oh, it's pretty tame, you can, but... that's Glasgow for you. They're not ready for us yet.
Well, that is Robbie on his very best Orkney dialect behaviour, I have to say. Thank you very much for speaking for the Radio 3 folks. And we'll let you carry on with the set just now. Would you please welcome back The Chair?
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was a wee set of tunes called Lily and Diana, written by Douglas Montgomery, who wrote the slow one, and a chap called Fian MacArthur wrote the fast one. Now, I think we're going to carry on with a song. We do sing as well. Well, I don't. These ones over here do. This is Brian Cromarty on the end here. He sings and plays the banjo.
Hello.
And we have a special guest singer tonight, all the way from sunny London. This is Amy Leonard.
Thus desperately dead in her fate. All parents do warn and take. Don't hurt the tiger instead of all. Advice but do not try to break. That many stand it for the flow. That many stand it for the flow. Standing for the blood, that many standing for the blood.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amy Leonard. She's not actually from London, of course. She's also from Orkney. That was a nice happy tune called The Hammers of Ciradale, a song about suicide in the hills. We all love a bit of that on a Friday night. I think this is our last set of tunes we're going to go ahead with. Thanks for the sympathy. This is a set of tunes that we know as the Hup set. It originated in the village of St. Margaret's Hup in South Ronaldsay. A whole lot of tunes. We'll just try and play them really fast, probably. That's what we kind of do. I was just thinking there, if any of you were struggling to understand Robbie and his Orcadian accent, you can get subtitles on page 888 of CFAX, I think. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much indeed to the chair from Orkney and their special guest tonight, long time no see, Amy Leonard there. That was absolutely lovely. What a surprise. You're listening to Mary-Anne Kennedy and World on Three on this final weekend of the Celtic Connections Festival here in Glasgow. We'll be heading next on the live stage to Ross-shire to hear harpist Rachel Hare and her trio. But first of all, let's get a word from the man who's been at the heart of the festival's 20th birthday celebrations. Straight off the stage at the Transatlantic Sessions, and I have to say, looking very cool, calm and collected, or maybe just shattered, considering. Please welcome Celtic Connections Director, Donald Shaw. So, first of all, good gig?
Yeah, amazing gig, yeah, no catastrophes, so that's a bonus.
You have two nights of this every year, on the Friday and the Sunday, and the Friday is it always the seat of the pants one?
It is, but actually, ironically, the trick is not to congratulate yourself too much after the Friday night and forget about it all on the Sunday, and then you start worrying about Tuesday.
It's the Saturday one, just to get the edge back and make sure that you're nervous all over again.
Yeah, that's so, actually, no, it went great. I mean, we've been locked away in a room for a couple of days, and I think it's always that thing where we don't want to be too over-polished. There was definitely a sense of that a couple of times tonight, so...
Happy 20th birthday.
Thanks very much. Well,
I bet you thought you'd never hear that again.
Exactly. Thanks, Maria. Same back.
Touché.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I mean, I've played every festival for the last 20 years. I've only been involved in the chaos of organisation for the last 6 or 7 years.
Can you remember that, your first gig at the first festival?
I can, yeah. I do remember Capercaillie playing, but my memory is stronger of the sessions. There was used to be called the Hospitality Inn just up the road, and kind of a really smart, almost like wine bar, and us forcing a session on the place, with some great musicians. So yeah, I do have a few vague memories of it.
And, of course, there was the legendary Festival Club when it moved into the Central Hotel down at the railway station there.
Yeah.
That has definitely gone into legend. I think it's going to become like the Woodstock of Glasgow. There will have been a million people at the Festival Club when it was in that very special hotel.
Yeah, it's almost like Graceland now. You know, it's in a sense that... I've been meeting musicians who have gone down just to visit it and see it in its new reformation kind of thing. So, I mean, it was pretty kind of pretty crusty, I think, by the time they developed it. But it just had always that great atmosphere musically, I think. Yeah.
What were the special moments for the 20th anniversary? Were there certain things that you thought got to have them?
Well, you know what? I think it was quite well encapsulated in the opening concert, you know, in the sense that there's fantastic pieces of music that Chris Stout and Finlay McDonald did with the pipers and a string section. But within the string section was musicians that had come, you know, all through the whole journey of the festival, people like Alistair Fraser and then artists like, I suppose, Julie and Eddie Reader and Rod Patterson and Archie Fisher. So folk that had been there all the way. And we tried to do a smattering of that all the way through the festival, just artists that have been there over the years. I think it still has that sense of legacy, if you like, you know. Yeah.
And the festival, from something that started off as 2.5-3 weeks in the darkest weeks of January in Glasgow in the winter when there's not a lot going on, the brand, I suppose, the festival, the name, has spread far and wide. You've been to other festivals in the UK and abroad. You were at the Ryder Cup earlier this year,
yeah.
Jammy Folk.
I know, yeah. It was thanks to us that they won. You know?
We know that.
So even though we kept Rory McIlroy up too late the night before the... I suppose we have branched out a bit, you're right, and we're looking at getting involved with other events over the years and kind of partnering with other festivals, and I think you're right that the brand does have that.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing what happens over the next 20 years. Have a great time for the rest of the weekend.
Thanks,
and for Sunday night. Donald Shaw!
Cheers.
You're listening to Mary Ann Kennedy at the Celtic Connections Festival in Glasgow for World on Three, and we're at the Concert Hall's Green Room, the elevated restaurant with the fantastic nighttime views down the main shopping dragon out across the Clyde to the south side of the city. When I started out learning to play the harp as a kid right here in Glasgow, it was a very unusual thing to do. We were, if not an endangered species, then at least a pretty rare breed. But over the years, through the dedication of organisations like the Phaeacian Teaching Movement, the Clarsach Society, and many individual performers and teachers, the Scottish scene has blossomed, and today the harp can justly reassert its right to its identity as one of the national instruments of Scotland, alongside the bagpipe and the fiddle. At the forefront of the current crop of Clarsers, not easy to say, as harpists are known in Gaelic, is my next guest. She hails from Ullapool in Westeros, and her trio has done an awful lot to help dispel the notions of douce, gentle angels playing sweet strains to soothe the soul. Although they will do that for you as well if you ask them nicely. Would you please welcome the Rachel Hare Trio? Thanks very much, Rachel. And you have to agree, it is a harpist nightmare to be slogging our guts out all night in a gig and then to have someone come up at the end and say, that was lovely.
I know, yeah. You know yourself as a harpist.
Now, you're joined here by two fantastic musicians in their own right, Jen Butterworth on guitar and vocals, and Ewan Burton himself, a very fine jazz bassist in his own right. I have to say, Rachel, you're making life very difficult for yourself. You'd think a trio would be very transportable, but for a harpist, you take a double bassist along with you. You must be an airport's nightmare.
I know. Well, luckily we usually borrow bass when we go abroad and things, but would you believe it, we can all actually fit into a tiny wee Ford Focus.
I think the three of you have to get on very well together.
Indeed.
Well, we'll keep the music going and I'll just let you introduce the next set, and we're very glad you're here with us. Thanks very much, Rachel.
Thank you. Well, we're going to play you some Swedish tunes. These are from the Gotlandsstoner collection, which is a very old collection that was collected and published in the 20th century. So, yes, hope you enjoy them.
Thanks a million to Rachel Hare on harp, Jen Butterworth on guitar, and Ewan Burton on bass there. This is World on Three, live at the BBC hub of the Celtic Connections Festival 2013, the green room of the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall. Still to come this evening, great favourites of the festival, the Old Crow Medicine Show, and very shortly, we're going to be regaled and assailed by the serried ranks of the pipe band from Lorient, the Breton hometown of a fantastic festival that was very much an inspiration for Celtic Connections when it started out 20 years ago. There's rather a lot of them, though, and a bit of setting up to do. So while they're lining up, let's hark back to last Sunday and a remarkable concert, Sahara Soul, whose three acts, including Baseku Kuyate and Tuareg band Tamikrest, were all very much with their homeland of Mali in their minds. And they spoke of this as eloquently as they played. We're going to hear first from Sidi Touré, though, from recently liberated Gao. And even though you'll have to brush up a bit on your French for this, we thought we should leave it to Sidi to introduce the songs.
Dikanga kweha la nenda gao dantonda bani nase aifaje
à une grande dame au Mali qui s'occupe des eaux. Vous savez, qui parle des eaux parle d'animaux. Les animaux font partie de nous. On doit entretenir, n'est-ce pas, les animaux, l'environnement et tout ce qui s'ensuit. Donc, je l'encourage de continuer parce qu'il y a un travail colossal qui n'est pas donné à n'importe qui. Nissé Gadone. Merci. Thank you.
Beautiful stuff from Mali's Sidi Touré, and we'll be hearing more from the Sahara Soul Concert in a little while with a different Malian musical culture to the fore with Baseko Kouyaté and Ngoni Ba. Well, our next guests, as I said, are all the way from Lorient in Brittany, and their festival Interceltique in August each year was very much part of the inspiration for the creation of this festival, Celtic Connections. With the combined forces, very scary on either side of me here, we got as many of them on stage as we could, and this isn't all of them. Scottish Great Highland Bagpipe on one side, Breton Bombard on the other, and a whole array of very scary stuff in between. It's definitely a sound once heard, never forgotten. Please welcome Bagad Sonorion Anorion.
We'll be right back.
And can you believe this is only half of them? Joining me right now is one of the bagpipers, Ronan Renou, and I think Ronan is probably more afraid of actually talking to us on Radio 3 than he is of playing on Radio 3, but thank you very much for joining us. This must be just about the smallest stage that the Bagad have ever been asked to play on.
Yeah, it's really, really, we are very nombreux. There is a lot of viper, a lot of bombard, so the stage is very, very close,
intimate. It's intimate. Excuse me. Now, I was talking about Lorient's Festival Interceltique, which is a very special festival in the whole sort of Celtic world across all the countries. Tell us a little bit about what it means for the town to have that.
You know that the Festival of Lorient is the biggest, I think the biggest Celtic festival in the world. More than 500,000 people come to Lorient, which is quite a small town.
Quite small. Sorry.
And it's very a lot of people, a big festival, and what I want to say is just that we are from Lorient. We are the Bagad, the band of the festival, and we are very happy to come here in Glasgow to play for another festival of the same kind, and we are very, very happy to be here.
We're very glad that you are here as well.
For many years, we play with Scottish pipers, Scottish drummers in our band in Lorient. They come from Pete Lockery. They are from the Edradour and Blair Atoll Pipe Band, and we are very happy to come at their home here to play.
And to sample the Edradour whiskey as well, I'm sure. Tell me just one more little thing. The Bagads in Brittany, they play with your own traditional chanters, the bombards, but you also have the Scottish Great Highland Bagpipe. Why is that?
The people who create the Bagad want to play the same music, the traditional Breton music that we play since for many centuries in Brittany, and they want to play that in band, as the Scottish pipers play in pipe band. So they create the Bagad, which is composed by Highland bagpipes, bombards, Breton instrument, Breton sobo, and drummers, as a pipe band and bombards.
A pipe band plus. Yeah. Well, we're so glad that you're here. We're going to let you play now. I know that was probably the scariest thing you've done since you got to Glasgow. Thank you so much, Ronan. We really appreciate it. Two more numbers from Bagad and Lorient. Please welcome them again.
Thank you.
thanks so much once again to Bagad de Lorient, the Lorient Pipe Band from Brittany. Weren't they just amazing? And there's another 21 where they came from. This is Mary Ann Kennedy, and you're listening to World on 3 live at Celtic Connections in Glasgow. Our final guests this evening are the Old Crow Medicine Show, and I have to say, they had a bonkers gig down at the old Glasgow Barrowlands Ballroom down at the other end of the centre of the city. Over 2,000 people crammed into the ballroom, and not only that, but the 400 people who were waiting outside, another band came and set up outside and started playing their music. The cops arrived. Did they clear them? No, they diverted the traffic. Well, while we get ready for the band that caused all that stir, let's head back once again to that Sahara Soul concert last Sunday and listen to some highlights from the master of the African two-string banjo, the Ngoni. This is Baseka Kuyati, joined by his beautiful wife, the wonderful Ami Sako, singing, and his hot-stepping Ngoni-playing backing band, Ngoni Ba. Thank you. Baseka Kuyate and Ngoni Ba from Sahara Soul, a Malian triple bill of a gig last Sunday, both poignant and uplifting, with their homeland so much in the news just now. You're listening to Mary Ann Kennedy here on World on Three, and we have only one more act to introduce on tonight's special live show. But what an act. They started out busking on the eastern sideboard of America and were discovered, if you can call it that, but they were given a big step up by the great Doc Watson, who invited them to play at his legendary Merlefest festival, and they were off. And they're here tonight in Glasgow at Celtic Connections. Please welcome the Old Crow Medicine Show.
From the valley, I'm a rebel boy, born on the banks of the Shenandoah. In 61, I went to the war to win one for Virginia. Hey! Yeah, my brother went first and they called me two. I was green as clover in the morning dew, so I marched with the drum, sang to the tune, carry me back to Virginia. Fire in the cannon, water in the well, grapes through the valley with a rebel yell. Hunter and rock, we call them marks, I care, and the big step in it. What was carry back? What's carry back? Back to Virginia. With a sword and a saddle, the banner and the gun, we thought for a minute our fight was done. So they lined us up with a metal gun and hammered us into the quicksand. Then they burned that valley with a blaze of fire, cut through the line like a red hot iron. We ran for cover with the horses piled, and we shivered in the cord against them. When the war raged on like flames of hell, we dug from the pockets of the ones who fell. Dressed in rags and ate like rats, when they get up and we cried, punch, carry me back, punch, carry me back. Carry back to Virginia. Horse, carry me back. Horse, carry me back. Carry me back to Virginia. Died in the valley, died in the swamps on the banks of the river with the white-tailed Jones. We died in the Duchess land of the field in the belly of the wagon for our wounds were healed. Died in the wards, starved in the camps, locked in the middle of the mean and rags. Spared our blood in a fight to defend in the bear to sold over Dixieland. Down in Alabama, down Carolina, way down Georgia on the Tennessee land. We're off for the rebels, Robert E. Lee. Never want to go home to Virginia. Never want to go home to Virginia. Oh, oh, punch, carry me back. Punch, carry me back. Carry me back to Virginia. Punch, carry me back. Watch, carry me back. I want to be buried in Virginia.
Thank you.
Fantastic. The Old Crow Medicine Show, Hot Foot, from Glasgow's Barrowland Ballroom. And I'm joined here by Ketch Seacor.
Hello.
Who you just heard talking there and singing and playing the fiddle and taking up his banjo and goodness knows what else. Now, first of all, you must feel very much at home here in Glasgow and at Celtic Connections with the kind of welcome that you got down the road tonight.
Well, we sure had a great night tonight down at the Barrowlands with a sellout performance, our first time here at the Celtic Connections Festival, and a real pleasure to be here. One of the things I love about playing here in Scotland, so much of the music that we play comes from here, and for us to bring it back is a wonderful feeling. It's like some kind of wayward child coming back home again. And I mean wayward.
Now I can see why the Glaswegians love you.
Well, that wasn't just Glaswegians out there tonight. They came from the Isle of Skye. They came from Aberdeen. Oh, man, they came from Inverness. They came from the Orkneys and Shetlands to see the Old Crows rocking the joint.
Now, I'm just looking at the cast list of the band, and you've got some names here. Well, there's Ketch yourself. There's Critter. There's your roadies called Tater. Does that mean you all come from the same roots as the music comes from?
We come from the same whiskey that the Scotch-Irish come from. Yeah, we've got a great assortment up here on the resophonic guitar from Calcasieu Parish, Louisiana. That's Gil Landry. Right here on the... And right here on the banjo and the guitar is Critter Fuquay. Morgan Janig is on the doghouse bass tonight. On the fiddle and guitar is Chance McCoy out of West Virginia. And a very special six-string banjo player right here. This is the Git Joe man, Mr. Kevin Hayes.
Kitch, you could read the phone directory with that accent. I'd sit there and listen all night. Now, I've got to ask you one very particular question from over here. You embarked on a fantastic journey last year, a very special railroad journey with the folk bop darlings from over here, Mumford & Sons. Who on earth cooked up that idea?
Well, it was those folk pop darlings and a few others, and that we got ourselves some tickets on a great railroad tour that started in Oakland, California, and ended up down in the Crescent City of New Orleans. We've made music the whole way, and it was a wild ride on the rails, rattling the whole way.
I think you're just going to have to come and do the maybe the sleeper journey from London Euston to Fort William or something like that.
Yeah.
You could play all night, and we'll just bring the festival club onto a wee word with the Caledonian Sleeper, I think, Beckins or ScotRail or someone. Someone listening out there, it's got to be done again.
Well, what about our pals down at Stena? Maybe we could do a ferry tour.
A ferry journey. Caledonian McBrain, eat your heart out. Well, we don't want you sailing, training, going anywhere without giving us some more music, so we'll let you carry on the set just now. Please welcome once again the Old Crow Medicine Show.
Take them away, take them away, love. Take away these chains from me. My heart is broken because my spirit's not free. Lord, take away these chains from me. Open up your gate now, let me put down my load, so I can feel at ease and go back to my home. Take them away, Lord. Take away these chains from me. My heart is broken cause my spirit's not free. Lord, take away these chains from me. Children, nothing in the pan. My wife, she died hungry while I was plowing land. Take them away, Lord. Take away these chains from me. My heart is broken cause my spirit's not free. Lord, take away these chains from me. Take away these chains.
is not free. Lord, take away these chains from me.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you now, Glasgow. I'm going to get my good old violin out here, and we'll go from the Scottish Highlands to the Southern Highlands, back home where we come from, down around Virginia and Tennessee and North Carolina, where all those places come together, West Virginia and Kentucky as well. We come to you here from Music City, USA, and we get a good number of Scotch visitors to come over and see us in Nashville, see us play on the Grand Ole Opry. You can always tell when the Scotch come to Nashville because they're always wearing their fanny packs. Yes, yes. They like to be prepared, you know, in case they run into Dolly Parton. They'll have their Polaroid right there at waist level. Well, we're going to tune it up for you because we know you care because you're Scots. You know, and you can't fool them like you can the English. All right now, boys. They're brave boys up here in these Scottish Highlands. And we are too back home in Tennessee. Now here's a hot little number, a brand new song that we wrote for you and stole for you as well. It's called The Brave Boys here on Radio 3. Well, it's over the hills and around we go. Now we go bound to go. Digging up the devil and devil go rocking to the weary land. Hanging up on nail and hold the line. It's hard time in the coal mine. Hey, let's look at that sunshine. Follow them boys on in. Brave boys here. Brave boys there. Your loving man. Hey, oh, the brave boy rocking in the weary land. There's no black people, Spain, and Joe, the stick 1,000 feet below. We laid their bones on a bed of coal rocking in the weary land. And the ball kept going to the bird under the roof cave, and you can hear water when it takes fate. Come on, let's follow rocking in the weary land. Brave boys here, brave boys there.
And thank you, Radio 3 listeners who are tuned in up there on the Isle of Skye and maybe up there on Islay as well. What's that stormy one? What's that stormy island up there in the sea, Gil?
Oh, up by Stornoway?
Yeah, up in old Stornoway, too. They're listening up there tonight. Well, wherever you are all across Scotland tonight, we're glad to be with you, beaming out there into your little yellow opals as you make traffic circles all down Sauky Hall and all across Aberdeen. We're going to do one more for you. Here's a song that I know would sound pretty good. Oh, one or two, really? Yeah. Oh, they must like us up here.
They must like us.
Well, let's do that old one from Louisiana before we get and doing our big old hit, right? All right, now here's a hot little tune. Now this one's gonna be climbing up the charts on Radio 3, and nobody else has got it on the whole BBC. But y'all are gonna hear it right here tonight in front of these fine Glaswegians. Why don't you kick it off for us, Mr. McCoy? This one's called Wagon Wheel. I pray to God I see headlights. I'm made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers, and I'm hoping for Raleigh I could see my baby tonight. So rock, baby mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock, baby mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. I pick a banjo now. Now all of them North Country winners been getting to me. I lost my money playing poker, so I had to up and leave. But I ain't a turning back to live that old life no more. Oh, so rock me, mama, a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. South out of Roanoke, I caught a trucker out of Philly, had a nice long toke. But he's headed west from the Cumberland Gap to Johnson City, Tennessee. I gotta get a move on before the sun. I have my baby calling my name. I know that she's the only one. And if I die early, at least I will die free.
Absolutely fantastic. The wheels rocking from Shetland to Sark and Ardnamurchan to East Anglia on BBC Radio 3 tonight with the Old Crow Medicine Show. Absolutely wonderful stuff. Well, that's about it for tonight's World on 3 and for our stint at Celtic Connections 2013. Although, of course, the fun continues here in Glasgow right through to Sunday night and the final outing of those transatlantic sessions for this year's festival. Thanks to all the musicians, the Rachel Hare Trio, the chair, Bagad Anorion, the whole BBC team who've been working across all the festival nights. I'm surprised they're still standing. They've done a fantastic job, especially tonight, producer Roger Short, whose imagination always brings in interesting things like 25 bagpipe players. No problem for our audio guys, absolutely fantastic. And of course, yourselves here in the green room and listening on BBC Radio 3. I'm Marianne Kennedy, and I'm going to leave you with just a couple more from the Old Crow Medicine Show. Good night.
See, see, right up.
kitchen in a morning gown.
Standing in the kitchen in a morning gown. Standing in the kitchen in a morning gown.
Thank you, Old Crow Medicine Show from the USA at the Celtic Connections Festival in Glasgow. That World on Three broadcast came live from the Royal Concert Hall in Glasgow, and it was presented by Marianne Kennedy. And Marianne is back on Sunday evening on Radio 3 with more Celtic Connections, another chance to hear her taking a musical tour of Canada's Cape Breton Island. That's in World Roots, Sunday night at 10 o'clock.
On BBC Two, Professor Brian Cox continues exploring life's greatest innovations.
In this film, I want to show you how the senses developed.
Think about the catfish. The catfish sees the world as a kind of swarm of chemicals in the river, or vibrations on the riverbed. The catfish sees the world completely differently, and no two animals see the world in the same way.
There's always more to see on BBC Two. Wonders of Life continues Sunday night at 9.
Well, there's always more to hear here on BBC Radio 3, of course. Martin Handley is here with Radio 3 Breakfast from 7 in the morning. And that's here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, digital radio and online, where the time is now 1 o'clock.
Hello and welcome to Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. I'm Katriana Young with chamber music to take us through the next couple of hours, starting with a trip to the 2012 Frederiksværk Music Festival in Denmark and three works all scored for string sextet. The first is the prelude to Strauss's opera Capriccio, but with the added distinction of being the subject of the opening scene as well. It's been played off stage. Listening to it is the Countess along with two rival suitors, the composer of the sextet and a poet. As they watch the Countess to see what she thinks of it, they settle down to an age-old debate, whether in opera the words are more important or the music.
Thank you.